Welcome to The Fantastic Pour, a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And my guest this month is one of the real talents behind Oh Hot Moo or Not, and who's hot? It's the Hot Squad's own Shotgun. Shotgun, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here today.
Okay, good. Well, I'm really happy to have you as well. Like I said, I'm a big fan of your shows, and definitely wanted to have somebody from the Hot Squad on, and you came highly recommended. So to let everybody in the Fantastic Lounge know, can you sort of explain real quick what Oh Hot Moo or Not and Who's Hot, what those shows are about?
So the premise is pretty simple. To bring people around a table that has little to no knowledge about superheroes in general, even comics in general, and to have them review this encyclopedia and determine by pictures, information on the characters, and text in general, basically, would you date them or not? So do you consider them hot, not? Was one of our rating for a while also, which normally is pretty easy to do when it comes to human characters, but
Right.
Really entertaining when it comes to non-humans, locations. Nothing gets spared by our really, how would I say that? We're not unapologetically, in English is our second language, unapologetically
Yes.
Rude to a certain extent. Like we're telling the truth. We're telling it as it is. And
Right.
I think it's one of the things that people like about the show is how we bring a new perspective, a fresh perspective on characters that people have seen for so long and, you know, take things for granted.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's really the fun part about it, is getting the perspective of somebody who may not know anything about Thanos, or I don't know, I'm drawing blank on people, or Daredevil, or anyone like that, and seeing how it's looked on in other people's eyes. So it's a lot of fun. It's very funny. I highly recommend both shows. So obviously, though, Oh Hot Moo is based on the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, and then Who's Hot is based on Who's Who. So you go through those catalogs, correct?
Correct. So we started the Who's Who not that long ago. I think we're only at episode 24 or 25,
Right.
But we're over the 100 episode for Oh Hot Moo. So
Wow.
We actually, we're going to celebrate our 10th anniversary of the podcast in March of this
Oh,
year.
Wow. Holy cow. I didn't realize it
11
was going
years
on that
since
long.
we've, well, yeah, we started technically 11 years ago with in a written format on the Legend of Super Bloggers, and we were reviewing the Legion of Superheroes. So that was really how it started, but that lasted about a year to go through, and we only did the male character at that point. So
Okay.
when that was done, we switched to it was a hit. Like people really liked it, so we
Yeah.
naturally transitioned to a podcast format with the whole encyclopedia.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a lot of fun. I didn't realize you've been doing that long. I'm sorry you've been saddled with Siskoid for 10 years, but you know what can you do? He has the microphones, right? So what are you going to do? You got to help him out.
We keep blasting. We keep joking around that we're going to do this until we die, because like 10 years and we're only in the teens, and then everyone wants us to do the Book of the Dead and everything, so it's never going to end.
Oh my gosh. I could talk about this for a long time. So let's get on with the show, and we'll come back around to some of this as well. But so sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. Shotgun, please tell us, tell our friends in the lounge your chosen ingredient and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
That was the part that was a bit more complicated for me, because as I established before, the whole premise of our show is that we are not comic book readers. We're not really familiar
Right.
with any of them. So that's the whole point. So to me, like, to have a favorite character is not easy to discern. And there was a bit of the imposter syndrome as well, because I didn't want to pick a character that a future guest would really have wanted to talk
Oh,
about.
no, that's fine.
So, and in general, I'm more of a manga reader, so comic book was not my thing. So I decided, okay, talking with the squad, I decided to go with one of our characters that really left an impression on us. And dating back from episode 38, that came out in 2018, so a while ago, I decided to go with Frogman.
And of course, I must ask, why Frogman?
So that the squad kind of like we're anim like okay, clumsy and silly characters tend to gain hearts easily with our crew. And Frogman, I don't remember the rest of the episode, but I know that he was the highlight of that episode because the others were like meh characters. But the whole story, like it is so clumsy, and the silly costume that really looks like it's handmade. It almost looks like a mascot in that, in the in Hoatmu, like the edition. It's just it brings a charm that really connected with us. And as we often do, we start inventing our own stories where we could go on dates with him, and he would bring us on giant lily pads across a lake. And so the imagination gets ahead of ourselves, and we just like we attach ourselves really strongly to the characters that we fall for. And Frogman was one of them. There were many more to choose from. One of the first that really kind of set out the show for everyone was when we had Angel and Armadillo in the same episode or really close by, and Angel got a knot. Like everyone was expecting that this was gonna be like the easy hot Angel now, too boring, rich kid, blah. But Armadillo, oh, tragic backstories and animal. Oh my God, we love him. Big spoon, we want to cuddle. So that kind of so it was really that kind of impression that we had with Frogman as well.
That's terrific. That's terrific. Okay. Well, Frogman, his real name is Eugene Paul Patilio. I believe that's how you pronounce that. First appearance, Marvel Team Up, issue 121 from June of 1982. He was created by J.M. DeMatteis and Cary Gamble. And we will get back to Frogman in a little bit. But meantime, why don't you tell us your ingredient of choice?
So, in case it wasn't obvious by the accent, I am not only a Francophone, I'm a French Canadian. So, while deciding for an ingredient, I wanted to think about what is the quintessential Eastern Canada experience. At first, I kind of dabbled with as a New Brunswicker, maybe that's a mistake. But I was thinking about going to Newfoundland and talking about screech rum. But really hard for you to find in your
It
corner.
was,
So
yeah.
yeah. So we decided to go a more a simple way and just go with maple syrup. So basically, I grew up surrounded by Sugar Shack. Literally, three Sugar Shacks were located within 5 minute drives of my childhood home.
So
And I
forgive,
could
I'm
just
sorry, forgive my American ignorance. What is Sugar Shack?
Oh, Sugar Shack would be where we would go to enjoy maple syrup during the spring. So there would be like tasting session of maple syrup. Both like they would boil into big cauldron, and you would have a stick, and you would like have smaller stick that you would. So you dip the big stick into the cauldron, and you lick the maple syrup off a smaller stick so that it doesn't like cross contamination. Although since COVID, people started questioning, like, oh, you lick this stick and you put it on a big stick. Anyway, so that was an experience every year with school. We would go there, and you would also like serve maple syrup taffy on snow. Very Canadian. So we had these location really close by, like three major ones from my area were located within 5 minutes of my home. So really part of my upbringing, if you want. And
That's cool.
also, I recently visited one of the National Maple Syrup Reserve in the country. Here's a bit of trivia. This is the world's only strategic emergency stockpile of maple syrup that's there to stabilize price and enable supply if there's a poor harvest. And unfortunately, though, this was not the reserve that was made famous by the Great Canadian Maple Syrup Heist of 2012, but very close to it.
All right. Well,
If you've never heard of
now
that,
I have to ask you,
then
yes, what was the 2012 maple syrup heist?
this was in the province of Quebec. They here's where the reserves are, and that's controlled by a provincial organization. And basically, anyone that produces maple syrup up to like that's not artisanal, that is for business, has to comply with these with the organization that manages supplies. And also, you have to bring a certain amount in the reserve. You can only sell a certain amount per year on your own, etc. And they basically then distribute the maple syrup and distribute the revenue afterwards. And some, yeah, well, people that own like maple syrup factories or like trees or so the some of them, they weren't really happy with this way of doing things, accusing the province of being communist and whatever. So it really became like a big thing. And during the winter of 2011, 2012, they started, I think it's I would pronounce it siphoning,
Oh,
like
yes,
the
siphoning, yes.
so they would siphon maple syrup from like one of the guardians was in on it, and an employee was in on it in the reserve, and they would siphon
Really?
the maple syrup out of it, replace it with water, so people would not notice with the weight of it. And it was about like it was estimated about $19 million Canadian dollar worth of maple syrup that was displaced during that time. They made a few shows about it. The latest was on, I think it was on Prime or something like that. It was called Sticky. So it's a quite famous event, and they distributed this maple syrup in Atlantic Canada, as well as the eastern states in the United States, like to make more money because they didn't want to follow guidelines from the organization that controlled the sales of it. So black market for maple syrup was a big thing that year, and it was estimated about $19 million in revenue that was there.
Wow, the maple syrup black market was hitting, huh? That's interesting. That's really
Here's
interesting.
a bit of Canadian
Siphoning,
trivia for you.
siphoning off the syrup. Interesting.
Yeah, and the only reason why they were found out is because at some point they got lazy and they did not replace the maple syrup in some of the barrels. And someone, a worker, like happened to hit with the machinery one of the barrel, and it just started bouncing. And they were like, "That, why would it bounce? Like if it was full, like this is like literally, quite literally, they could have gone on for a lot longer because the reserve, if there's good harvest, would not be touched for a while." But no, just because they got a bit lazy, they got found out.
It's like when you're stealing booze from the parents' liquor cabinet and you forget to put, water in the vodka bottle to even off the levels again. Not that I've ever done that. Anyway.
Me neither, never.
Well, that is really interesting. So now we are going to be mixing some maple syrup into a whiskey cocktail shortly. But before we go over the recipe, let's learn a little bit more about maple syrup. Although I think Shotgun just stole my thunder with the 2012 heist in a segment I like to call Secret Porridgeons. Did you see what I did there, Shotgun? It's like secret instead of, because it's the fantastic pour. And I call it Secret Porridgeons instead of Origins.
Love a
See what
good
I did
pun.
there? There you go. Thank you. Anyway, okay. The origin of Canadian maple syrup. Now, if I get something wrong, please let me know.
I'm not that well versed. I will say that. What I shared about the heist, I just learned because I visited that reserve not that long ago, and I was made to translate that information from a very Francophone Quebecer to my friends that were Anglophone. So I retained a lot more by doing that, I guess.
Oh, very good. Very good. Okay. Well, and thank you to trca.ca for the research. Canada is the world's leading maple producer with 75% of the global market. Maple syrup is not just a modern-day moneymaker for Canada. It also holds an important place in their culture and heritage. Prior to the arrival of European settlers, indigenous communities developed the process of tapping maple trees for their sweet water. Indigenous people in the north had access to red, black, and sugar maples, and which is now known as the Maple Belt. Now, this is the hardwood forest that extends from the Midwestern United States and across Ontario, Quebec, New England, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island. In the early spring, there was a brief period that the Anishinaabe, does that sound right? Are you familiar with the Indigenous
I
group?
think it is Anishinaabe, yeah.
Okay, Anishinaabe. Okay, perfect. Anishinaabe peoples called the Maple Moon or Sugar Month. Communities would go out for their annual collection of sap. A maple tree would be tapped by creating a small hole from which the sap could exit. And then a handmade birch tree bucket would be hung beneath the hole. Now, the tapping techniques varied. Some cut a V shape in the bark, while others cut a hole and inserted a spout or spike made from the basswood or willow tubes to direct the flow into the bucket below. Once the sap was collected, it would be left out in the cold to naturally separate the lighter water from the heavier sugar syrup. The frozen water would then be skimmed off. Others boiled the sap down to the syrup in clay or metal pots over a fire. And maple syrup has been a lifeblood to the indigenous people for thousands of years, used for multiple purposes such as sweetener, anesthetic, curing meats, and obviously a trade item. When Europeans arrived in Canada in the 1600s, indigenous peoples passed their maple syrup knowledge along. By the late 1700s and early 1800s, the settlers expanded the maple syrup production, and I'm sure they were quick to give credit and share profits with the native cultures who they got this knowledge from, of course.
Yes, as an historian, of course. Yes,
Yes,
that's how
of
it
course they
happened.
did. Of course, that's exactly how it happened. Over the years, new evaporation methods have been introduced, but the essential practice of maple syrup production learned from the indigenous communities has remained the same. Today, small businesses and large international companies alike are making Canada the global leader in maple products. Okay. Did you see anything I got wrong there? Is it?
That sounds pretty. Like, this is what I learned when I was at the reserve as well. So
All right.
you're spot on.
Good, good. All right. Okay. Shotgun, it's happy hour. So let's make a drink. And I call this, this is one of my favorite titles. I call this Maple Leap. See what I did there? Instead of leaf. And anyway. Shotgun, why don't you tell our friends what we need? What are the ingredients?
The ingredients, you would need 2 ounces of whiskey of choice, 1 ounce of orange juice, half an ounce of maple syrup, half an ounce of lemon juice, 2 dashes of orange bitters or any bitters of your choice, a pinch of rosemary, and ginger ale.
Okay.
And should I go through the
Yeah, go
instructions as
ahead,
well?
please.
Okay. Then to mix the drink, you would add the orange juice, maple syrup, lemon juice, rosemary, and bitters in shaker and stir well. Then you would add your whiskey to the shaker. Pour contents into a cocktail glass with one large cube or filled with ice. Top with ginger ale and garnish with lemon or orange twist.
Yes, very good. So, all right. Well, Shotgun and I are going to enjoy our Maple Leap as Shotgun displays some bartending skills by flipping $1,000 bottles of cognac. So that'll be very exciting. So everyone in the Fantastic Lounge is welcome to drink along as we enjoy this promo break.
So, which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Who's Doc who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
And we're back. Shotgun now owes me $10,000 for broken cognac bottles. So, No, don't worry. We have insurance. It's okay. Anyway, now that we've had a chance to taste our Maple Leap, what do you think?
I think it's great. Because as much as I like maple syrup, I'm not the kind of person that really loves a sweet drink or sweet anything. I don't have a sweet tooth. So I was a bit nervous when I suggested it. But I think the ingredients really balance each other in a good way. The drink is refreshing. This is probably something I will do again because I have whiskey here, but I never really know what to do with it except like drinking on a rock. So this is really nice. And I think
Okay.
like with the bitter and the whiskey, that really balances the orange juice and the maple juice. So yeah, no, really, really liked it.
Well, go. I'm glad you liked it. This was an interesting one for me. Obviously, when you said maple syrup, I was like, oh, okay. So I think we even talked excuse me, a little bit about using whiskey, because that's just sort of a natural pairing, when people use kind of maple flavored or things like that in cocktails.
Yeah, there
So
is a
the
really famous maple a maple whiskey that's made in Quebec called Sortilège, and that was almost something I brought up, like maybe just maple whiskey, but I didn't know if you could get it anyway. So just to have maple syrup directly mixed with whiskey, perfect.
Well, a lot of especially bourbons here in the US have some of that sort of maple taste to it, that's used. It's often because bourbons tend to be sweeter whiskeys, so you'll get some of that. Now, I actually used Canadian Club for this, so I went full north on this, but yeah, you can use something like that. Yeah, the different ingredients, like you get some citrus from the lemon and the orange juice, and then obviously some bitter from the bitters, and then you get the sweetness from the syrup and some of that bite from the whiskey, and then the rosemary I thought would be an interesting twist to it to just kind of add a little bit more of a flavor profile, primarily because we have in our spice rack, we have a whole thing of rosemary, and I don't get to use it that often for things, because it's sort of it has a very distinct taste to it. So when you do use it in cooking and things like that, you don't use a lot of it, so it tends to stick around. So I just used kind of a pinch of that in a cocktail recently that I did for my wife, and I work. So I was like, oh, well, let's throw this in, see how it works. So I'm glad it did, because I'll be honest, I didn't try it ahead of time with the rosemary. So I was like, oh, I hope this doesn't screw it up. But yeah, use it sparingly, but it does add some flavor to it
Yeah, the
and
aromatic of
creates a
it is
balance.
really like it's subtle, but it's still there. And I think you get it more in the scent than in the taste to a
Right.
certain extent. So yeah, no, I think it was a great addition. Also want to comment on the maple leap, which is a fantastic play of words, both on the character and the maple leaf. And I
Thank
want
you.
to really show my gratitude for you not to calling it the maple leaf, because as a Montreal Canadiens fan, I would not be able to drink something called the maple leaf.
Oh no. Well, I didn't know that ahead of time, but I completely understand. So you're a Canadian fan. Yeah, I'm not I'm a Flyers fan. They have sort of a rough history with the Maple Leafs as well. So I'm not a big Toronto fan either. So yeah, no, it was definitely I just kind of wanted to play. It kind of hit me. I was going to call it something else, and then at the last second I was like, "Oh, Maple Leap. That's perfect." So anyway, I went with that. So I'm very proud of that one. Thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Just real quick, so you mentioned that you don't normally drink sweeter drinks. Is there something, do you sort of have a go-to drink or something is there a type of drink that you usually enjoy?
Normally, I'm more on the simpler side. Like I'd love to have like a good old fashioned, or even like just a rum and coke, something like that. Nothing really fancy. Honestly, probably more of a beer person than a cocktail person. Although lately, my fiance and I are more like on a sake kind of trip, where and the soju as well. Like we like to try these like different flavors that are available. So that's I kind of it varies basically. Sometimes I will be in the mood for, I don't know, a margarita or something like that, but it's not as often as I would reach out for a beer or something.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, while we enjoy our Maple Leap in the Fantasta Lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we'll be discussing today that involves Frogman is Amazing Spider-Man, issue 266, publisher Marvel, cover date July 1985, on sale date April 1985. Cover price 65 cents. Story title Jump for My Love or Spring is in the Air. Writer Peter David. Penciler Sal Buscema. Inker Joe Rubinstein. Letterer Rick Parker. Colorist Glynis Wein and Nelson Yorntoff. Editor is James Owsley. Now, thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, for that information. Now, Shotgun, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantastic Lounge what this story is all about?
So the story starts with the mutant outcast Toad, who has had enough of his tortured life and decides to jump off a building. Spider-Man arrives just in time to save Toad and explains he cares about Toad's life. Toad is touched by this and promises that when he gets out of jail, he'll devote his life to his new friend, Spider-Man. A few weeks later, a comic book shop is held up by some thugs. Spider-Man shows up to stop them. Suddenly, the Toad leaps in and knocks down a crook. Toad explains he's out of therapy and has decided to live up to his promise to be Spider-Man's partner. Eugene Tatilio, the Frogman, sees this scene on TV and vows to stop Toad. Bit of jealousy there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man tells the Toad he can't be his partner, but he'll meet up with him the following morning down by the docks and hash things out over breakfast. Later that night, the Toad goes to a bar and tells some criminals Spider-Man will be at the docks the following morning, hoping to rescue the wall crawler and prove his value as a partner. Meanwhile, Peter Parker decides to go up to his building roofs to get some fresh air. There, he runs into his neighbor, Bambi, and they get to talking. He asks her about how to ditch someone gently. Bambi suggests you set them up with somebody else. Spidey arrives at the docks and is ambushed by hungover thugs, whom he disposes of quickly. Frogman and Toad start to fight amongst themselves as Spider-Kid shows up too. The trio clash, and Spider-Man tells them that they all deserve each other, inadvertently convincing the trio to start a crime-fighting team. Later, a tired Peter returns home and joins his neighbor Bambi to watch the sunset.
So, we'll get into the story and everything in just a minute. I did want to go over the cover real quick. So, what do you, just to describe the cover really quick? Again, it's an issue of Amazing Spider-Man. So you have Spider-Man in his black costume period, and he is in the middle with his arms out in each direction, holding back a menacing-looking Toad and a menacing-looking Frogman, ready to go at it with each other. So, and then power lines fly all around. And it's actually a pretty dynamic cover. What did you think of the cover?
I think it's pretty simple, but it's effective in kind of setting the tone of what you're about to read. I think the positioning is really interesting as well, and like you can tell that there's going to be some sort of clash between these two characters.
Right.
Not that I knew anything really about the Toad before jumping into reading this, so I was wondering
right.
who's that weirdly costumed guy, and why is he not wearing a mask? So that kind of got me a bit of questions. But I think like really the positioning, it's energetic. I don't know. It has like a good, I don't know. It felt like something interesting would happen. Like if I would fall in front of that in a comic book store, I would be like, it would definitely capture my eye and my, I would have some questions.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then you see at the bottom, it has the teaser text that says, "This man, this frog," you know, very melodramatic and very tongue in cheek at the same time, obviously, that this clash of titans between Frogman and Toad is going to go down. So,
and you're right that it makes them both look pretty menacing while they're not really when you read the story. So it kind of gives you another kind of level there where you're thinking like, oh, what happened that made them so like angry or make them look so, I guess, powerful when they're almost like joke characters when you kind of know a bit more about at least Frogman. So so that's yeah, no, to me it was a good cover to bring readers in.
Right. So, and one thing I always kind of liked about this period of Amazing Spider-Man was the title dressing above where they have the spider webs too. I always thought that looked kind of cool. So
did they do that for all along the time when he was wearing like the black outfit, or was it just?
I'm not 100% certain. I'd have to go back and check. I remember them using this design for a little while, and I'm sure somebody in the Fantastic Lounge can give us a better description. I apologize. I didn't really look that up, but I always just
no,
kinda,
that's fine.
I just kind of liked it. I think they used it for a little while, but they've used different sort of web dressing and different Spider-Man titles. But I always thought this looked neat. And I think part of it is because you have the black background and then the white webbing. And it just looks kind of neat.
Yeah. That's why I would think that it would be more associated with the costume, but it's really efficient.
You're probably
and I think
right.
It's,
yeah.
It's a good way to represent the character as well. Sometimes like just having the Amazing Spider-Man would be a bit boring. So to have this level of detail added really, really makes it pop out again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. So I think we both think the cover's a winner. So what did you think? I can just ask you real quick. What did you think of the story overall?
So I think the story is very silly, which is something I love. So jumping in, I was like, okay, I don't know what I'm getting into. Started a bit on a dark side, especially with people encouraging the toad to jump. So at this point, like, I don't know if they knew who he was or if it's just like, oh, a random guy in New York that wants to commit suicide and let's encourage him. Like, so that kind of rubbed me in the wrong way at the start, but you know. There are all kind of people in this world, and some are assholes, and you can censor that if you need.
Yeah, no,
But
it's okay. You're 100% right. Yes.
listener's discretion is advice, and this is really tame compared to what we say on a lot, which
It
is saying.
is 100%, yeah.
But yeah, so that kind of gave it a weird vibe to begin with. But I think it's. It kind of it really sets the tone also to like explain why the Toad would be so obsessed with joining
Right.
Spider-Man later though. So that I can
Yeah.
understand it. It really creates this dynamic or this opposing character where Spider-Man tries to help him even though he doesn't really know him versus other strangers that just don't care or just want entertainment because seeing someone jump off a building is apparently entertainment. So I can understand like the reason why they went this way as writers.
Now, did you know you didn't know who Toad was going into this story? Is that correct?
No, unfortunately, we're not quite that far into the tease
Oh yeah,
already.
you're almost there, aren't you though? Yeah, you're gonna be there
I
soon.
think
You should
so,
be okay.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so basically he's been around for a long time, and he was more or less sort of like a, for lack of a better term, a toady or a stooge for Magneto back in the early days of the X-Men when he was with a group called the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. He was kind of this, you know, a lackey. Like if you think of like Igor for in like Frankenstein movies, you know, kind of the slow-witted toady that would always be like walking alongside Dr. Frankenstein, you know, and Dr. Frankenstein wouldn't pay him any mind. He was just sort of a servant for him. That's kind of what Toad was to Magneto. Magneto treated him very harshly and dismissed him all the time. So when he had no further use of him, Toad was kind of just sent along and really didn't have a place in the world. And that sort of not directly leads to this, but is along those lines. So he's sort of a lost soul who just wants to belong somewhere, wants to be wanted. And this is where it leads him, that he's about to jump off this building. So and it
So
and to, yeah, go ahead.
readers coming in would know that the character is about that is about to jump is the Toad.
Some would, probably some wouldn't. You know,
Okay.
it's kind of one of those things where it's part of the Marvel universe and everything's interconnected and everything else. So if you're a longtime reader, you probably know who he is, but there's a very good chance if you were a new to Spider-Man or new to Marvel Comics, you might have no idea who this guy was. And they explain it a little bit, but they don't go into too much detail because it's really not, I mean, all of his backstory isn't that important, just that you know that he's in a bad place and you know, look
Yeah,
out for
because
him.
he does mention Magneto when he's plotting to set up Spider-Man, and he talks about the orphanage where he was, I guess, bullied. So yeah, you get the sense that he's a character that's been in some stories for a while, but was not really appreciated or had was valued by his peers. So it's a good, I think it's a good way to introduce a character to new readers without having to go too much in detail into the backstory.
Right, exactly. Now you do notice too, Spider-Man in this first opening scene is in his red and blue costume. And then after, so basically, like as you were saying, so Toad's on the side of this building. He wants to jump. There's a particularly scumbaggy guy down on the witnessing this, who's yelling for him to jump because he wants the entertainment or something because he's a, you know, a sick bastard. Anyway, Toad jumps. Spider-Man saves him, tells him his life is not worth this, worth, I mean, his life is worth more than just, you know, throwing it away. And says that, you know, in some cultures, that makes Spider-Man responsible for him, which Toad really takes to heart. And then he's taken away, you know, to jail, but says when he gets out, you know, because I guess the justice system, if you try to kill yourself, they just lock you up because that's always the right thing to do. But I'm sure he got some help too, I hope. But yeah, so that's sort of the opening scene. You know, he saves him from jumping and everything. People may listening maybe like, well, what about Frogman? Isn't this supposed to be about Frogman? And I'll be honest, there aren't a lot of choices for Frogman. So, you know, oddly enough. So his the Frogman's father was a villain as well, called Leapfrog. He was more, there were a lot more stories about him than there are about Frogman. So anyway, and Siskoid wouldn't let me do Marvel Team Up 121 because I guess somebody, I guess he had just recently done that. So on his Marvel, on his FW Team Up show. So we're doing this one. There is Frogman as we come. So just be patient. Frogman is involved.
So yeah, I suppose, and there's like a little note as well when you see Felicia about the fact that mm-hmm. this sequence take place before the rest of the continuity that you would read normally.
Yes.
And I suppose that's why there's a time jump and then he changes to his black outfit and everything.
Exactly.
So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So he runs,
I guess.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I was just making assumptions, but you will probably be able to explain it better.
Yeah,
than
no,
I am.
No, that's no, you explained it perfectly. That's absolutely the case. Yeah. So this way, when they fast forward to when he's, you know, when Toad's out of jail and trying to meet up with Spider-Man again, you know, it's supposed to be a few weeks later. So that, you know, things have changed in Spider-Man's life. But before we get to that, yes, you mentioned Felicia. So who shows up after he helps out Toad? Who does Spider-Man run into?
That's Black Cat, one of the mm-hmm. few cosplay I can actually do. Yeah. But yeah, no, she shows up after he gives the Toad back to authority. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they seem to be having a tense conversation, tense relationship at this point, I think.
Yeah. They're always up and down. And I guess it's one of the down parts right now. Are you a Black Cat fan?
Again, don't know much about the character except what mm-hmm. we've seen on Ohotmu. Obviously love the aesthetic. I'm a big fan of a white hair on any character, so that was a plus for me right there. She's absolutely gorgeous. So an easy hot when we reviewed her, obviously. I like the fact that she was like basically a criminal before turning to was she really considered like a hero though?
The obvious parallels are between her and in DC Catwoman in DC, where mm-hmm. they both sort of straddle that line. They're both thieves and they've obviously committed many crimes in their past, but they're not evil people. You know, they and they have ties to, you know, she has ties to Spider-Man, Catwoman has ties to Batman, you know, things like that. So they kind of walk both sides of the law. Yeah. No, I would not think of her as a villain. I wouldn't necessarily think of her as like a hero either, although she's done heroic things, obviously.
Definitely. So no, I like her. I think she's well aware of her charms as well. So I mm-hmm. think that plays with the character a lot, and I think like in the Spider-Man universe there are a few characters that I'm more well versed with because I played mm-hmm. both PlayStation, actually the three PlayStation games, the Spider-Man games. So she does not really appear in one, but there's like side quests where you like follow or trace, which is really fun. I obviously very hot character, very interesting. Don't know much about her though.
Okay, well then, so we fast forward a couple of weeks later, and we're in a comic book store because, of course, if you're gonna hold up a place to get lots and lots of money, you're gonna go to a comic book store to get that money. But we have these two thugs that hold up a comic book store. The cops are there. There's like five police cars that pull up, and they take hostages inside the comic store. I don't know why they just didn't make this a bank or something like this, sort of odd. I guess they just wanted to play into the genre a little bit. And so they have the two thugs that are holding up the comic store have hostages. And then what happens next?
Police showed up because apparently cops are fans of comic books. That mm-hmm. is a weird thing. Well, I mean, they're humans like anyone else, I guess.
Just interrupt one second. I will note, so if you the part of the dialogue of the police officer is, this will just take a minute, the new Savage Sword of Conan came in today, is what they're doing. Apparently, and I learned this from, I think Rob Kelly talked about this on Treasury Cast one time. Conan was very popular with adult men. So, and that was one of their big sellers as a magazine style comic book. So I think they were playing into that a little bit and mentioning that. That's why they specifically mentioned Conan and
yeah,
what
really
he
like
was going
these,
in to get.
Yeah. I love when they insert like little Easter eggs like that, like naming real life like comic book stories and all. So that kind of made me giggle because obviously don't know much about Conan, but I knew that it existed, and that was like, oh yeah, okay. So that explains why a random policeman would show up at a comic book without anyone like raising the alarm. So yeah, Spider-Man shows up. I'm not sure. Is it even like established why he was around there?
No, I think he just pops in. Yeah, he just happens to be nearby.
Maybe he was going to buy Conan as well. We don't
maybe.
Know.
Maybe he might have.
So,
yeah, maybe he enjoys
so
it as well.
Actually,
yeah,
I guess it's Peter Parker that shows up since he decides to set up his camera and then turn back, put his costume on, and stops the burglar. And while one was trying to hit him behind the head, that's when Toad arrives and basically jumps on that thug to incapacitate him and save Spider-Man,
right?
Which I'm sure would not have been able to handle two thugs without his help. And really interesting how he decided by himself that he did not need more therapy sessions.
Right.
I told me that that's a sign of someone who's really healthy in a mental capacity. But
exactly.
Anyway, fun conversation how he decided at that moment, like, I'm a free man and the only thing I want is to partner up with you, my good friend Spider-Man. You're stuck with me, want it or not.
Yeah, exactly. So, and of course, this is being filmed by the looks like the local news, and who happens to be watching the newscast but our hero who finally shows up on page 8, Eugene, not in costume yet, but Eugene, who is of course the fabulous Frogman. So
really, really love the shot when he mentions his name and the shadow of the TV makes him look like Frogman. Fantastic. I love that. But yeah, obviously Eugene seeing the scene plays out in front of his eyes on the TV. I think being jealous not only of the fact that Toad declares himself the partner of Spider-Man and he would rather be the partner, but also a frog themed or toad team, like the same kind of the amphibian themed a character to be his sidekick when he was there all along. I think that really pisses him off. calls him a ripoff of the fabulous Frogman, and decides that it's not gonna go his way. So what's gonna happen next?
That's right. And obviously, so Toad is still following along Spider-Man, wanting to be his partner. Spider-Man wants him to leave him alone. You know, he even mentions he could try taking the place of the Black Cat. Puts an image in Spider-Man's head of the Toad dressed up as the Black Cat for a second there.
Fantastic. Again, silly story, silly imagery. Yeah. Love it. Impressive that he can actually follow up to Spider-Man, I guess.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Because at the end of the day, he's a mutant, so I guess that was part of his power all along. But for someone who's not familiar with the Toad, like, that's something that kind of strike me. Like, oh, this guy is actually able to follow Spider-Man while he's leaping from building to building. Mm-hmm. So impressive in a way. Concerning to a certain extent on another end.
Yeah. Toad doesn't skip leg day. He can get around. He can jump pretty high. Eventually, you know, Spider-Man just says, fine, I'll meet up with you at the docks the next morning and we'll hash this out over breakfast. So he's trying to, I think he's buying himself some time so he can figure out a way to let Toad down easy. And then Toad hashes out this plan that he's going to make sure that Spider-Man realizes that he can be a valuable partner. And it's sort of a terrible idea with good intent at heart, I guess, but bad idea. And of course, someone overhears this conversation, that because of course it's not an inner monologue for Toad. He's just talking out loud to this like he's on stage. And somebody else hears that. We don't know who it is yet. It's a silhouette in a window. Someone overhears the Toad talking to himself about what he's going to do.
Yeah, and the silhouette at that point, I thought, was Frogman. Like, yeah. No questions asked. These are the three characters that are on the cover. So to yep. me, that was Frogman, which was funny that he saw it on TV just to hear the plan afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, you know. But yeah, as it's quite, I mean, as one does, just, you know, standing on the rooftop, speaking to ourselves about our evil plan. I'm surprised it's not been the downfall of more villains in the past when they have these inner monologue that comes out.
Yes.
Kind of a cliche. And I find it really funny yeah. that they use that to say, like, oh, someone heard him, because, of course, he's speaking mm-hmm. out loud to himself about what he's going to do about this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Marvel never lacks for bombast, so they're all about that. So, so we get to Josie's bar, which was been made famous recently in the. I don't know if you've watched the Daredevil television series either. It was on Netflix or now the one that's on Disney Channel for Marvel. But Josie's bar is the bar that Matt Murdock, who is Daredevil, and his friends frequent. So in this case, it's more of a like a lot of ne'er-do-wells in here, a lot of criminals who are looking for a score. And Toad goes in there sort of incognito and talks about how Spider-Man's going to be down the docks and they should ambush him. And then he leaves the bar and he's followed by who?
By our Eugene again, not even yes. Frogman yet, still in his civilian clothes mm-hmm. and trying to tail the Toad, failing miserably.
Mm-hmm.
good on Toad to being aware of his surroundings, I guess.
Right.
And at that moment, they kind of go against one another. It's more the Toad going at Eugene, I guess. Eugene doesn't have a lot of things to say,
mm-hmm.
Except after the Toad is gone.
Uh-huh.
He decides that, you know, Spider-Man doesn't need you, but as long as he has me, he will never need the help of the Toad.
Right.
But the poor, poor Eugene, not able to even put a word in front of the Toad, again, showing his, I will say, weakness to a certain extent. Like, he's not a really strong character in general. So
yeah.
One of the things that the girls loved about him is like, yeah, he's trying his best.
he is. And then a dog pees on his leg, of course, as well as he's standing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead. An interesting trivia for Josie's. I didn't realize it was the same from the TV show. I love that show. Yeah, I watched it. A big fan of of the show. It's really, really good. Really well written.
Yeah, and it's used a lot in the comics as well, which is obviously where the TV show got it and everything. I just wanted to make mention of that when I saw the sign. I was like, oh, it's Josie's bar. I would say I'm starting to get a little bone to pick with this issue, though, that we're about halfway through the story and we still haven't seen Eugene in costume yet. You know, I want to see the Frogman costume. What are we waiting for here? You know, it's kind of
I want to see him in action. I want to see him like defend his position as
exactly.
Spider-Man's friend.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
one-sided, but still.
Yeah, it's like that old Spider-Man television show from I think it was from the 70s and stuff. I used to watch reruns of that. So, you know, he'd be Peter Parker like the entire show, and he'd finally be Spider-Man for like the last 5 minutes of the episode. And you're like, come on, I gotta wait the whole thing. But anyway, so Peter goes home and he, you know, he's stressing out about this, and he goes up on his roof through the skylight, and there is his. This is lovely neighbor Bambi, and he has a little chat with her and kind of asked her how, you know, they sort of talk around each other a little bit. They're sort of vague about what the problem is, but still get to the heart of it. And, you know, he needs to get rid of this of Toad, and she has a good suggestion for him that, you know, set him up with somebody else
interesting suggestion instead of going to the usual, like, oh, you know, talk it out, be mm-hmm. honest, but be gentle. No, just, you know, set him up with someone else. That way you'll get rid of him and he'll still be happy and not resent you. Very funny to me that what is the last straw for Peter Parker is when he turns on the TV and Kermit is there.
Yeah.
So a little appearance of another frog
uh-huh.
theme character really made me laugh there. And going on the roof to change his mind just to find his neighbor there. A very, very sexy lady there. Bambi, quite a name. I mean, I don't know if she was expecting to have anyone else with her on the roof, but that's quite the outfit she's wearing too.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's not like she wasn't expecting anyone either, you know. I mean,
I guess,
pose
and
ready, you know, she was ready, yeah.
she must be pretty cold if that's before almost sunrise, because she says that she goes out to see the sunrise every
Right.
morning. Like, damn, that's cover yourself a little, lady. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if the I don't know what time of the year this happens to the story happens. Obviously, it's not in the middle of winter, hopefully, but
Yeah.
I
Well,
can't
they
imagine that
all,
it's that warm.
yeah. Most of the villains have jackets on, or all the thugs have jackets on. So it's probably, I'm guessing like maybe early spring or early fall, something like that, or a mid fall, maybe something like that, you know, where there's a little bit of chill in the air. But you're probably right, you know, Bambi probably should bring a sweater up there, or a little or a shawl, or a little blanket or something like that if she's going to be up there for the sunrise.
I want to be really clear here for the listeners. I'm not telling her to cover up. I'm all
Rest.
for
Right.
showing shoulders and being
Yeah.
sexy on top of rooftops, but I'm just concerned for her well-being.
Exactly. She's awful close to the edge too. She's kind of sitting on that ledge, and there's not much between her and the pavement at that point. So just be
No,
careful, Bambi.
she's one interesting woman for sure.
Yeah,
But yeah, no, having a good suggestion. Not that I really think Peter thought a lot of the suggestion. Like he I don't think he really figured that that would happen, because he was
Right.
going to meet Toad alone. So how would we how would he be able to like set him up with someone else in this scenario?
Right.
But still kept that in mind throughout the rest of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And
So
beating himself up because he was leaving this lovely lady on the rooftop to go talk it out with the toad. Like, yeah, that I guess you're a good guy to, follow on your promises, but I agree that it's a decision you made there.
That does, you know, that's funny. I didn't really think that much of that, but yeah, it does speak to his character. I mean, he's the good guy. He's the hero, and he said he was gonna, you know, talk to this guy and try to help him out. You're right. He easily could have just ditched Toad and not shown up, or just forgotten about it, or been rude to him. But he, you know, he's the consummate good guy. So you wanted to figure out. But
And I
finally,
think
yeah,
that's
sorry, go
it's
ahead.
kind of important too that he goes to meet him in the end, because like he was very adamant at first when he tried to take his own life that like I'm gonna be there for you and I'm gonna be your friend. And so in a way I was a bit disappointed that it turned to I want to get rid of that guy this quick, although I understand that it was a hassle to have him following him around. So to keep his promise and show up for him on that morning for me was important to make sure that there was not too big of a disconnect between the moment to save his life and the moment he wants to kind of break things up.
Absolutely. So finally, on page 15, we finally got our first appearance of our guy Frogman in costume.
Yes. And Spider-Man figuring out who's following me by the sproing noise. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So he comes to warn Spider-Man because, you know, these thugs are going to show up and ambush him. And they keep saying there's like all these, I forget how many they mentioned. I think like 40 some guys or
Like
something like that.
47 dangerous
47.
gunmen.
Thank you very much. Yeah, but
Yeah, and
instead.
that really like if Spider-Man had any hesitation, like if like when Frogman told him like it's a setup, Toad made this up to like bring you in the harm's way, and if Spidey had any like reservation about it, like I don't maybe Frogman is wrong. The moment Toad appears and says, like, I'm gonna help you against the 47 dangerous gunmen, kind of giving yourself away there that you know exactly that there are 47 gunmen when there's a 9 in total. So like not really subtle.
So they all hung up. Obviously, they just stayed at Josie's all night because they're all hung over or still day drunk or something. You know, barely able to stand, let alone shoot or fight or anything else. And this leads to Frogman confronting Toad, and so those to start fighting as these drunken thugs from Josie start firing at Spider-Man. So he's got to deal with them instead of breaking up the fight between Toad and Frogman. So we got a couple pages of Toad and Frogman going at it while Spider-Man's dispatching of these thugs. What'd you think of the fight between Frogman and Toad?
I think it was really like, it was well done in the way that they both aren't real heroes. So right. it's not an epic fight. Like Toad punches him and immediately goes like, how my hand. And then the leaping and just like evading by just crouching and all of that. Like the right. fight is silly. The fact that it's right next to an exotic pet store makes it even funnier. Not to go too much ahead in the story. But also, I think my favorite part is all like how they completely ignore Spider-Man throughout all of this while they're like, oh, I hope you're happy. You put him in danger. And he's like, wait, I am in danger? And like, thank God I'm here to help him. Like, are you sure, guys? Serious? Like, I can't handle this myself. Like, what are you talking about? And they're just like, nope, he's not here. We're going at it to each other. Like, you don't even bother anymore. We need to settle who's going to be your partner while he's just a bystander who wants nothing to do with all of this.
Right. And then the fight, as you mentioned, the fight leads to them crashing through the window of an exotic pet store and all these frogs and toads start leaping out because, you know, just hit this right. Why not? If you're going to be this silly, just put it, you know, hit it right on the nose and just go with it. So they're, you know, they're bouncing around and everything and mocking each other as, you know, as Spider-Man finally gets this. And one of the toads or a frog, either a frog or a toad, helps Spider-Man out one last time with the last guy because he's got a gun trained on Spider-Man. One of the thugs has a gun trained on Spider-Man from behind, and a frog jumps on the thug's gun, and I guess he's afraid of frogs or toads, and so he goes, ooh, yuck, and as soon as he does that, Spider-Man turns around, punches him out, and okay, he says, thanks, frog, so it is a frog, yeah. So in the meantime, Frogman and Toad still fighting, and then we get the appearance of the Spectacular Spider Kid, who
heard of that character before.
Yeah, he had shown up once or twice prior to this. So it turns out he was the kid who overheard Toad doing his outward monologue on the rooftop. It was not Eugene. So he comes because he wants to be Spider-Man's partner too. What did you think of Spectacular Spider-Kid showing up?
So I was really confused because at first you only see like one of his, for lack of a better word, tentacle finger thing.
Appendage, leg, whatever.
So when I saw that, I'm like, are we going to bring in an actual villain in here? Is this Otto Octavius? Like, is this going to be an actual threat happening here?
Right.
But I'm, at the same time, you see that, and like, there's no need to fear. Like, this is a dissonance that I was not prepared for. Obviously, the Spider-Man's reaction tells me, like, oh, this is another joke character, and this is just going to make everything worse for him. Poor Spidey. So the kid just trying to flip the car, not being able to. So Spider-Man does it for him. And just I don't know if it's to make him feel better or just to take him out of harm's way, because the thugs would have ended up shooting him, obviously.
Yes.
At that point, it was just like, okay, so we bring another weird character in the mix. And that's basically how the fight ends, when he's able to get the attention of both Frogman and Toad, and while trying both to stop the Spider Kid, right? Yeah, Spider Kid, they collapse and fall on top of him, which puts an end to this ridiculous fight, which I loved. Like, I love the ridiculous fight.
Yeah. And then you're right. And then when they sort of gather themselves, Spider-Man gets what Bambi suggested in the first place. His neighbor Bambi suggested in the first place that these three become sort of kindred spirits and decide to leap off together and become their own little crime fighting team called the Misfits. And Spider-Man had some additional names for them, the All Wiener Squad, the OI team, which I guess would have been at the time a play on the A team, because this is the mid 80s, and the Spastic Three. So that's all. Some other suggested names for them, but it works. You know, he gets these guys kind of realize that, hey, we're all misfits. You know, maybe working together we'll have fun, and they become friends, I guess. And then Peter at the end the next morning shows up in the rooftop one more time to see Bambi as they enjoy a nice sunset together, and maybe some other stuff we don't know. It goes to the end. So,
Yeah.
go ahead.
So you said next morning, but I think it's the same night. It's at night because there's a sunset there. They kind
Oh, you're right. You're
of,
right. I'm sorry.
yeah.
Yes. Sunset.
But I kind of like how it's almost an accident that Peter, well, the Spidey brought them together, telling them that you deserve each other. And it's like, wait, by that I don't mean too late. They already have their plan in mind that, yeah, we are alike. We should, like, he doesn't want to partner with us. We will partner with each other. Like, this is fine. And I don't know if this is going anywhere, if we're gonna see the three of them together at any point later on in other stories, but I can only imagine that their partnership, if they want to try and fight crime together, it cannot go well. I can't imagine this going well. I can imagine all of them fighting to get like the spotlight and being the center of attention. So already there, not a good team, really.
I agree. Plus, one of them is a child. Maybe don't endanger a child. But to my knowledge, I don't think that they ever appear, excuse me, as a group. But I would have to, maybe somebody else in the Fantastic Lounge knows the true answer to that. But as far as I know, they haven't, or at least I didn't see anything. I did a quick kind of search. I didn't see anything where this trio, the Misfits, had gotten back together to fight any crime. But all in all, yes. So it's a fun, silly story, you know, sort of a nice interlude in the Spider-Man, series. And we get Frogman and some Bambi
Yeah.
too. So, you know, you can't go wrong with that,
And
apparently.
I think it's a fun play also on the usual Marvel, even DC team up thing where a team will fight each other before realizing that their interests align and they become an actual team. So I think it's a way to like make fun of that cliche in comic books.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it is. It is.
How
So.
it applies to real heroes, but also kind of lovable losers as well.
So now, have you read a lot of Spider-Man? Well, let me back that up a little bit. I know, and I realize, you know, the premise of your shows is primarily because you mentioned you read manga stuff. Do you read any mainstream comics from like DC or Marvel or anything else, or is it just primarily your experience with them is through the show, through the, you know, Hot or Not stuff?
I don't read much comic like I used to with Discord. I did a review of the Legion of Superheroes reboot, so I read through all of that with them for the blog, and that was really the first time that I read the typical American comics. So except for that, I don't read comics in general, but Ohatmu brings me some knowledge, and just the Marvel Cinematic Universe as well. Like it's becoming more and more detailed with different appearances, and I love that it's been 10 years now that we've been doing Ohatmu. So the little like Easter eggs I kind of pick on, like that you probably have seen the last Fantastic Four movie. So, and I remember like just the mention of Diablo, like I squeal, like because this was another really silly character that we kind of, I don't know if we hated him, I don't think so, but we had a laugh reviewing this silly character. So to have these mentions to bring in like not as known characters to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's something that I really love about the show is being able to recognize those names or recognize those characters.
Oh yeah, well that's cool. Do you enjoy, do you like the MCU movies? Do you have like a favorite?
Ooh, that's a good question. What would be my favorite? Like I, ooh.
Or it doesn't, I mean, it wouldn't have to be a specific movie. Did you have sort of, do you have like kind of a favorite character or team or anything like that? Or have you seen most of them or all of them
I'm
or some
pretty,
of
I
them?
think I've seen all of the movies. I
Okay.
haven't seen all of the TV shows. That's becoming a bit much to follow
Yeah,
all of the
it is. It's
MCU.
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'd say like in terms of favorite characters, okay, so one of my favorite movies of the MCU would be Thor Ragnarok. I really enjoy that movie. Like it was like it was funny, it was silly, but it was emotional also. So yeah, and obviously Infinity War and Endgames are just like such a incredible moment in time during these 2 years. So that was epic. But in terms of favorite characters from the MCU, Loki is a big one. If you listen to our podcast, I kind of break sound waves when he appears in the episode. I can't even reproduce the sound I've made at that moment. It was really weird. And I'm a big fan also. I think Doctor Strange is really interesting. Like I knew nothing of him before the MCU. And a big fan of Benedict Cumberbatch, but like I think that the character is really, really interesting as well.
That's one of my daughter's favorite characters too. She's really she loves Doctor she I like Black Widow and Doctor excuse me Doctor Strange and Thor are kind of her favorites. Yeah, that's, well, that's neat. And it's you know, the movies are a lot of fun, and it's amazing the world and the, you know, just the empire they've built out of this is just unreal.
And it's very nice also that it's a medium that brought a lot more people into the fandom, because I mean it's not that long ago that being a comic book nerd was frowned
Oh,
upon.
yes.
I mean, to a certain extent it still is, but at least like it's become like Marvel and DC has become a lot more mainstream and people recognize more than just Batman and Spider-Man. Like it's great that it brought these amazing characters to a wider audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, anything else you wanted to say about the issue?
Nothing much. A bit like you, I was a bit disappointed that Frogman would not show up earlier, but I think it was a good way to bring him in. Maybe it could have been a bit faster and spend a bit more time on the character itself. But I think this issue was more about Spider-Man and Toad than it was about Spider-Man and Frogman. But still very silly, very fun, worth a read, definitely.
I could have used a little less Toad, a little more Frogman, but a little, or at least more of a balance. But yeah, it was a fun sort of you know, Donnybrook between the two of them at the end and everything. So that made up for it some. So Shotgun, it's last call. In this segment, I asked my insightful guest Shotgun some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepared for the show. I asked the questions. Shotgun fascinates us with her answers. In
I hope I will anyway.
as with every case, I always provide my guests the first two questions, and then the third question is a mystery question. So, fantastic question number one: what are your favorite things to put maple syrup on?
There's a few, like obviously pancake would be the easiest one. That's the default. I do have a fantastic chocolate chip cookie recipe. That's called the worst chocolate chip cookie ever because you don't want to share them. And the recipe calls for maple syrup in the dough, and that makes a huge difference, I feel. So that is absolutely fantastic. It's one of the I'm not a baker. I am terrible at baking. I love cooking, baking, horrible. But this is one recipe I will do, and it's a hit every time. So that would be like a big number two.
May I ask really quick, is that a secret recipe, or is that like
No,
a
I can
hidden?
definitely share it with you if you want to add it
Yes. Oh
to
my gosh.
absolutely. I mean, I'm sure if you Google the worst chocolate chip cookies ever, you will find it, but I will send you the recipe for sure.
Oh yes, that sounds
And
awesome.
so I think that's one of the things that plays into the flavor, but also the fact that we use like smaller chocolate chip and bigger chocolate chips, so like the smaller ones really melt into the dough. It's
Oh
amazing.
my gosh. Well,
Another thing I
okay,
like
sorry,
to
go
put
ahead.
maple syrup on. Now I'm giving you like I'm making you hungry now,
Yes, I am.
especially after we have a few drinks in.
I
Like
know.
Another thing I love to put, I like to put maple syrup in coffee or tea instead of using
Gotcha.
sugar, things like that. One of my favorite things to do is instead of making a London fog, I make a Canadian fog when I replace the vanilla with maple syrup
Okay.
in the, well, basically tea latte with Earl Grey. So that's one of my thing I do at home. And finally, I think ice cream. In general, like I like to put the maple syrup on vanilla ice cream.
Oh, very interesting. Okay. I don't know why I've never thought of that before. That's very, really good. It just never occurred to me before. That's a really good idea. I'll have to try that as
Instead of
well.
using like chocolate or caramel, like a good
Yeah.
little bit of maple syrup on it, it's mwah.
Oh,
And if
wow.
you have like nuts or pecans or something lying around, put that in, and you have made yourself maple nut ice cream right there.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, that's those are all excellent those are all excellent choices. I like all of those. Did you have any others? I don't want to cut you off before we go on to the next question.
No, because as I say, I'm not, well, I use it a lot for cooking in general as well.
Yeah.
Like there's like a few recipes that I have uses maple syrup, like a pork with Dijon mustard and maple syrup. Like this combination, actually, Dijon mustard and maple syrup together, like it really balances well together, and it's part of a lot of recipes that I have where they
Wow.
use maple syrup. It's great too. But when it comes to making something more sweet, those are the things I always use it on.
All right, very good. Okay. Well, now I'm really hungry. Let's speed this along. I want to go eat. Fantastic question number two. Now that you've enjoyed the Fantasta Lounge, if you were to create a lounge for the Hot Squad to meet, what would it be like? What would be the decor? What kind of food and drinks would you serve? You know, et cetera, et cetera.
So I think technically the Hot Squad already has its own Fantastic Lounge when we record, because that's the good thing about being friends in real life and all in the same city is that we record together in the same room. So I guess
Gotcha.
our Fantastic Lounge would be at Siskoid's place. And if I were to talk about this, the decor, well, it's a room in his apartment. It's supposed to be a bedroom, but really it turned it
Okay.
into a recording room.
Right.
And it's covered like with shelves with comic books, with movies, with all sorts of board games also. And the walls are plastered with images and other comics or things that he received from either as a gift or that he bought himself. But like I know that there is little pictures of the Legion of Superheroes everywhere in
Okay.
the lounge itself. So that is what we record normally in. But as far as if I was to create a different lounge,
Right.
for one thing, I think I would make sure that we would have like some really good sitting area for recording, really like making us in a very comfortable, because we record on
Okay.
Friday nights after a full week of work,
Right.
and that's a little bit why we get so hysterical. We're exhausted when we start recording that. So yeah, I think having a good place to sit, to be able to relax and really like enjoy what we do together, which we've been enjoying for 10 years. So I
Yeah,
think we're gonna keep on doing it for a while. The decor, I think, needs to be as nerdy as possible. That's definite.
yeah.
But try to avoid spoilers as much as possible, because that's the other thing. We don't want to discover a character too much, too far. Like
Oh, I see.
the
Okay.
joys of doing this is not knowing what's coming next. And now I know
Gotcha.
that Toad is coming at some point, which is fine,
Gotcha.
but like, so I'll have at least a little bit more to say when we encounter the character.
Right.
But yeah, so that's kind of the fun as well. So to try to keep it as new as possible. And in terms of food and drinks, definitely no alcoholic beverages, because we really don't need it. The few special episodes we did where there was booze involved, listeners realized that we were not joking when we were saying that we're sober when we're doing this. We're just tired.
Right.
And basically, us drinking just makes us louder and rowdier, which Poor Cisco. He deserves better than that. It's enough to just have us on a regular weekday. So no alcoholic beverages, but a few options to make sure that all of us can enjoy what we're drinking. So a few
Yeah, I mean, it
carbonated
could just be
drinks, a few
snacks and things like
uncarbonated
that. Yeah.
drinks, and yeah, and just having like and something that doesn't make too much noise as well. So like ice in cups, that's a bummer. We would not be able to do that because we don't want to have editing Siskoid cannot deal with these little noises. Make it as clean as possible in the
Yes, he is
final
a bit
edit.
of, he is a perfectionist when it comes to that. He's the master
Absolutely.
editor. Yes.
So it's really funny for us to just tease him when we record, and like we talk about editing mic a few times per episodes, and it's not just editing mic that is pissed at us. It's real life in front of us mic sometimes that just like can you just move on. But
That's funny. That's funny. So,
yes.
when you say the comfortable sitting arrangement, would it be would it be couches? Would it be sort of a round table? Would it recliners? Would it just sort of comfortable office chairs? What how would you prefer to sit?
I think it would depend on each of us individually.
Right.
So, I can imagine like even like Amelie and Jose are always like when we're hanging out, often like sitting on the ground. So they find it really comfortable, which is really weird to me. But so I think like bean bags and having like sort of lounge chairs, but not too reclinable, but having some sort of setup that would be circle as much as possible so that we all face the microphone. Oh, and one thing I would love for us to have, especially when we do the special episodes, because if people are not familiar with the show, obviously we're reviewing what is available in Ohotmu and in Who's Hot,
Yes.
who's who. So, and that's one moment in time, one, maybe two costumes that are included there. So, for example, when we reviewed Spider-Man, it was in his black outfit. So that was the main picture. There were smaller pictures with fast costumes, but that's it. So every time we finish two editions of the comic book, so once a year, it's about once a year, I think, we do a special episode where we come back to characters with different outfits. So to have some sort
Oh,
of
I see. Okay.
screen to like have a really good view of that,
Oh,
to really
yes.
review the characters,
Yeah.
that would be really nice because the way we're working right now, which works fine, is we have a computer screen and two tablets where we can like,
Gotcha.
but to have Cisco to have full control of when we change characters, because sometimes we want to zoom in and then the next character appears and you just hear screen spoilers, and which is always cut from the final edit, but just makes it more difficult in the end for Siskoid to edit. And also to have like this kind of big flat screen TV or projector where we could like do this event, like that would be nice. So to have like these kind of big comfy chair where we can sit as we would want, like either reclining a little or even like having enough space that we can cross our legs and stuff like that, just to be chill, comfortable, but to have an optimal situation so that we can easily record, hear all our voices clearly in the microphone, and make it as easy as possible on Siskoid. His like when you started the episode and you said that your guest was one of the real talents behind Who's Hot or Not and Who's Hot and Who's Not, I was like, is that a little hint of Siskoid?
I got I love Siskoid. You gotta take I got I always take some shots at the guys though, you know. It's part of the fun.
Siskoid,
So yeah.
because absolutely. But like he works so hard for all of his podcasts and he takes it
Yes, he
so
does.
seriously, so like to make it easier for him, I think would make sure that we actually finish Ohotmu and we get to finish Who's Hot, because we're just starting with who's who. Like as I said, we're episode 24 and I think we're just in the C's, so we have a lot of stuff to cover. Yeah, and he's always so he's concerned with not playing in each other's field, so that's why we didn't touch Who's Who for a good while, because there were other podcasters that were working with Who's Who, and he made sure that they were comfortable with us taking up Who's Who as well when we started back in, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago. I'm not sure anymore. So yeah, we're episode 26 and we're still in the seas, whereas Ohatmu episode 110 and we're in the
Wow.
teas.
That's
So
crazy.
it's crazy to think that we're approaching the end of Ohatmu, but it's not gonna be it.
Yeah. Nope. There's plenty. There's always more. There's always more. So, all right. Well, very good. We'll get a contractor over to Siskoid's place and start building that out for you. Just send him
Fantastic.
the bill. Just send him the bill. It's no big deal. All right. Well, okay. So here is your mystery fantastic question. Are you ready?
Oh, sure.
And of course, I couldn't resist. So we're gonna just not to steal the thunder from your shows, but just real quick, we're gonna hot or not the characters from this issue. So just say you can just say hot or not and give me a couple words on them. Obviously, the title character is Spider-Man in his let's just say Spider-Man in his black costume.
Oh yeah, okay. So that's an easy hot. We did review Spider-Man back then, and he's always been a fan favorite in Marvel, I'm sure, but especially for us, like again, we don't know much about superhero Marvel or DC, but Spider-Man was always something that we knew about because he's just that popular and people resonate a lot with him. So yeah, definite hot. No matter the costume, like we've seen many different costumes for him, and I don't think any really missed the mark.
All right, very good. Okay, Toad. And again, you don't
I
have to
will
say too much. I
probably,
know you're going to be covering him at some point
yeah. So
relatively soon,
knowing that
so I
we're
don't
in the
want to, yeah.
tease, I think like in a few issues we're gonna be covering it. But my first reflex after reading this would be not. I don't like someone that's too clingy personally.
Good point.
And he
Good
seems to
point.
have a lot of work to do on himself.
He
So
does.
yeah,
Yes.
it would be a not.
Very good. Black Cat.
Oh, definite hot. I know she's definitely very sexy, very intriguing character. And we always love someone who has a bit of a darker side as well. So hot.
Got you.
Scorching.
Frogman.
Oh, big hot. It's not necessarily his best appearance. I don't necessarily like someone who's jealous, but he's being pretty pragmatic throughout it though. Like, even though like it comes from this is not necessarily a right place to do like what he's doing, he's still looking out for Spider-Man, and he's just funny in general. And I think like even in the fight he's pretty resourceful, even though he's not the strongest or anything. I think he's doing well for himself. So yeah, that's still a hot for me.
Yeah, he used his springs well. He kind of like when Toad tried to jump on him, he used his, put up his spring to shoot him off there and everything. So he used his costume pretty well.
Yeah, and he's mocking the Toad as well. Like he has a lot of confidence when he wears his costume, whereas when you see him as Eugene, not able to put a word when Toad confronts him and all, I think it's really interesting to see the dichotomy between when he wears a costume and not.
And who wouldn't have confidence wearing the Frogman costume?
Oh, right. It's great.
Spider Kid. Now, obviously, he's a child, so we're not going to say,
Yes, so that's always kind of an issue.
not in that frame, but just sort of, in general, what you thought of Spider Kid.
Yeah, so we don't see much of him, and as I said, I've never encountered the character before, so I don't think he's even appeared in Ohatmu when we did the S's,
Probably not,
or
no.
maybe I wasn't there, but I don't remember reviewing the character. But again, after 10 years. We might have, and I'm completely off track there. But anyway, he seems to be like, to me, it's interesting, like the fact that he has this apparatus on his back, like the tentacles, the whatever legs, spider legs he have. Like, I don't know if he built that himself or if he stole it from somewhere. But like he seems resourceful in a weird, not great way, maybe too confident for his own good, and I'm just wondering, like, where are the parents in all of that? Like, this poor kid, like, he's getting himself in trouble, and what's gonna happen if he gets hurt or whatever? So I can understand why Spidey really wants to protect that kid. So he's But in the end, I'm not convinced yet. So I think like he's a bit delusional. So for me, would be probably a not.
Yeah,
Not that I would haunt him, but like I don't think
I know
he's
what you
cool
mean.
enough for me to be like, yeah, that's a cool kid. It's more like a, oh, you're a bit delusional kid. You should stay home, do what kids do, and just and wait until you're a bit older to decide if this is really what you want to do, and not bother Spider-Man and put him in harm's way because he's too busy trying to protect you instead of fighting the bad guys.
And regarding like where the parents are, yeah, I don't know how he put together an apparatus like this, these Dr. Octopus type legs, spider legs, in a like New York apartment building without his parents noticing it either. So that's like, hey, mom and dad, pay a little more attention, maybe.
I wonder also for the costume, like did he just buy a kid's costume somewhere? Because
Right.
I imagine like Spider-Man costume exists as well in this
Oh,
reality.
sure.
So he just bought a Spider-Man kid's costume and then get this Dr. Octopus apparatus and yeah, I'm ready to fight crime now. It's oh honey.
Yeah, and then of course Bambi.
Oh, that she's hot. Like I don't know much about her.
Right.
I guess that she's probably one of Peter's different love interests, and that's, I guess it's like we know more about like the Mary Jane and the Gwen Stacy and Black Cat Felicia, but I've never heard of Bambi before. No, she's definitely hot. She seems and she doesn't seem like a dumb character either. Like this is something I kind of appreciate with the Spider-Man's female lead in general. Like they're all smart. They're not like your token women in distress.
Absolutely.
So I think it seems to be a good match from what I'm seeing, and hopefully she doesn't have some sort of a dark secret that she's keeping from him. I don't know enough about her, but
Yeah, or
no, for
like
me, that's a
tragic
hot.
end. I don't, that's another one. I don't remember whatever happens with her. I think she was sort of introduced, I think, when she was like sunbathing with her friends on the roof, and like Peter was trying to go out that way as Spider-Man, like sneak out the roof, and then he saw these girls and he's like, uh-oh, and then he got to know him that way. And I don't know whatever became of Bambi. That is something I'd have to figure out. I don't know if she just, like a new writer came on and just sort of ignored her, or something, she moved or died or ran away with Frogman. I don't know what happened to her, so I'd have to check that. But yeah, I like her too. It's kind of nice. She's almost like this like hot wise sage, like just sitting on, that he can just go to the roof and get advice from, or things like that.
Yeah, and
It's sort of a yeah.
she's assertive as well. Like when it comes to her at the end, she's like, oh, the creaking of the roof pop, it's probably either a burglar or it's Peter Parker. Not even looking at him, asking him how it went, and immediately like starting flirting with him when she like immediately asked, like, speaking of friends, do you have a girlfriend? Oh, would you mind keeping me warm and watch the sunset with me? Like it's like she's going for it. She knows what she wants and she goes for it. So that's always something I like. She's not shy. She's not, what do I say? Like, politically, like super, like, oh my God, I'm so cute. And, what's the term I'm searching? But like,
Like a damsel in distress or something like that, or just like
not
a like
even that, just like she's too shy to even admit what she wants, or it's
okay
always like
okay
the she's
she's
not
not
like the
playing coy.
reserved. So it's not all on Peter's back to go and seduce her. She's also part of this flirting and she wants it and she goes for it. So that's fun. That's not just a one-sided thing or typical romance comes from the man.
Well, it sounds like Bambi's the real star of this issue. I don't know.
Well, she's wearing green there at the end. Maybe she's into Frogman. We don't
Yeah,
know.
maybe she is. Yeah, maybe those two rendezvoused, and this is sort of the afterglow or something. You never know. She's up there on the roof.
Just as we do in Hollandmu, I can make a story in my mind and decide it's canon.
There you go. There you go. The Frogman and Bambi story. Anyway, that's awesome. All right. Well, thank you. And like I said, I tried to keep it brief. I don't want to step on the toes of Ohatmu, but I thought that'd be a
Well, at
fun
least
way
there
to
was
finish it. Yeah.
only there was at the end of the day, there was only like Toad that we haven't seen. Like
Right.
Bambi was not part of it, unless
Right.
maybe she's dead and she's in Book of the Dead. I don't know.
Maybe
Or
that's
maybe she was
true.
in the character, like maybe when Oahdmu went out, she wasn't
Yeah.
important enough at that time, or not even a part of Peter's life. Who knows? Like
Maybe.
this is the other thing that's kind of difficult with those encyclopedia. Like they came out in, I think, the 80s.
Yes, yeah.
So you it's again a snippet in time where some
Yeah.
characters have 2, 3 pages, while big characters only have like a quarter of a page or a third of a page,
Yeah.
and it becomes so much bigger later on. So there's like this disconnect sometimes that we comment on, but that's because it's a product of its time, obviously.
Yeah. I'm just hoping she didn't become a super villain or something at some point. You know, like I always dislike it. It's a bit of a trope in comics that all the supporting characters end up either becoming villains or getting powers or stuff like that. And I'm like, no, just let, you know, there are normal people in the city. Let her just be a normal person, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah,
So
and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. It's fine. They can
exactly.
just
Well,
move on and go back to the
yeah.
regular superhero team up, girlfriend,
Exactly.
boyfriend, like
Exactly. And
whatever.
that's the easy thing about, you know, supporting characters if they're just regular people, is people move, they get new jobs, you know, stuff happens, you know, they find someone else to get married, whatever. They're easy to write in and write off. You know, you don't have to kill them or give them powers or anything like that. So anyway, Shotgun, it's closing time now. So I can't thank you enough for being on the show. This was a lot of fun. Where can listeners find you?
So we mentioned it a bit of a few times.
Yeah,
So
50
Ohatmu or
times, but we're going
not,
to talk
and
about it again. Yeah, absolutely.
Ohatmu or not, and who's hot and who's not. So if you want to hear about that, we're on, from what I understand, most typical podcast platforms, Spotify for sure. I think we're on Apple Podcasts as
Yep.
well.
Yes, you are.
And you can also listen through the Fire and Water Podcast Network website, where we have both the audio for the podcast, but also Siskoids create supplemental information. So there's always 2 links per episode. The first one is the episode itself, where you can listen and leave comments that we always appreciate. And then the second link is the supplemental, where Siskoid shares the image we work with. So also it's good for the listeners, because if you're not familiar with Ohatmu or who's who, you may be thinking like, why are they commenting on this particular costume and not the usual one? And it's because this is what's in the comics. So it's fun to have this kind of supplemental also available for listeners. So yeah, it's a completely stupid premise of a show, but it's a lot of fun, and it seems to work. We have
Yeah.
a good amount of listeners. People seem to find us entertaining. Good, because
Yeah.
if it would just be us finding us funny, I don't think we would have necessarily done it for 10 years. But yeah, so there's a lot of content if you want something to listen to, that's kind of a bit dumb but fun. A bit of dumb fun, I think, is a great way to describe this. There is a lot of episodes, like 10 years worth, once a
Yeah.
month to listen to. So you're set for a few months at least to listen. Like we have one listeners that binged everything, and it was like crazy time that it took to listen to everything. So shout out to
Crazy.
Chris Pine, but not that Chris Pine.
Well, right, the other Chris Pine, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
But
I can't
no,
believe like he binged that in like a like so many episodes a day.
oh
It's
my
crazy.
gosh. Oh my gosh.
He must have had a terrible time, or a terrible blast of a time. I don't know. But yeah, imagine me, but with 5 other French Canadian ladies around a table discussing comic book characters that we know nothing about, and expect the unexpected.
Yeah,
Because
and
we
thank
always end up liking the ones that people would not
I
believe,
yeah.
and despising the one that everyone thinks is an easy win for a hot.
Well, you know, I'm count me among those listeners, and you all never fail to surprise me with who you like and who you don't. I'm almost always wrong where I'm like, oh, they'll probably like this person. And no, they hate it. I think my favorite was Niles Calder from the Doom Patrol, who you guys all hotted, and I didn't think he had a chance, so I thought that was pretty funny.
See, you said the name and I was like, huh?
Yeah, you're like,
And
what?
then I
Who?
said the Doom
Yeah.
Patrol, and I goes, okay, that's DC.
Yeah, yep, yep. Yeah. That was a more recent-ish episode. But you know, and thank you actually for pointing out that on the website that you guys always include the gallery of images, because that's actually pretty important, because that way people can see exactly what you're referencing. Because you know you're basing this on, they might be like, oh, well, Captain America or something like that, and you're only looking at certain images, based on the handbook and everything like that. And if people aren't referencing it from that specific thing, you know, they might have a different thought about the character or something like that, or it could be a different costume, stuff like that. So that's good to point out. And I always do a gallery as well for my shows, and I always forget to mention it. So thank you. You do a better job of that myself, of saying yes, if you know, when you go to the website, as you will for this episode. Obviously, we always include the recipe. I also include a mocktail version if appropriate. This one I did create a mocktail version. And then we'll have some pages from the comic book itself, and then obviously an image of the cocktail. And were you able to, did you take a picture of your cocktail prior to
Yes, I did.
consumption? Perfect.
I'll
All
send it
right.
to you after the recording. I tried my best. I wanted to make it like again the quintessential Canadian picture.
Yeah.
Noticing real quick that I'm not a patriotic person because I don't even have like a Canadian flag anywhere in my home. So I just I figured something. So it's going to be really
I'm sure.
tacky Canadian picture of a drink.
Perfect, perfect.
Because
I'm excited.
I can't do just a simple picture. This is not who we are. We have to be extra.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make something different, like to make it as specifically Canadian as I could.
Very good, very good. Well, I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see it. I'll certainly add that to the gallery as well, so everyone will be able to enjoy that. So, Shotgun, once again, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun, and we will be right back.
Attention, attention, all personnel. New from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, it's MASHcast. Hosted by MASH mega fan Rob Kelly and a rotating cast of VIPs, MASHcast analyzes episode by episode the greatest television series of all time, MASH. Find MASHcast on fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Jocularity, jocularity.
And we're back. If you'd like what you've heard, support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. My fellow network all-star Sean Ross has chosen the Fantastic Four, and he considers himself the Frogman of the network. If you, dear listener, choose the Fantastic Four, I will come to your house and watch the sunrise with you, or at least find some fun way to mention your name on every episode, that is. Now, here is the feedback from episode 14 with Andrew Leyland, featuring Spider-Man and Glenn Morangi. Last episode's very guest, Andrew Leyland, says, "Thanks, Brett, for having me on. This was so much fun. It's been bugging me since we recorded. I wanted to swap out Sam Axe for Sidney Bristow." All right, Andrew, I'll note that. And thank you for being on the show. You were awesome. Fantastalounge regular Dr. Ann says, "Great episode that made the holiday drive to the family pass wonderfully. Happy holidays to all." Now, looking at the gallery, the art is definitely aping Frank Miller's work. It's funny, Ed Hannigan's a solid artist on his own style. I wonder if he was told to do it like Miller, given the Kingpin vibe, or if he did it on his own. As for the Fantastic question, I have to comment on the chess question. First off, in this day and age of 3D printing, I would be very nervous if I was Dr. Doom's chess carver. He better be on point. The chessboard, villain side, rooks, rhino, and juggernaut. These are bulls traveling in straight lines and big and bulky like buildings, perfect rocks. Knights, electro, and shocker, more in it for the buck than revenge, trying to sneak away with crazy escape routes like the knight's move, perhaps underestimated. Perfect knights.
Bishop's Spencer Smith and J. Jonah Jameson. Both guys try to work the angles to defeat Spider-Man, thus diagonal movement. The King is Venom, a dark reflection of himself and powerful. And the Queen, according to controversy, is Mary Jane Watson, powerful, tantalizing, but has led to a lot of angst in his life, and mostly because on the hero side, there's only one piece, and that's the Queen, Gwen Stacy. Simply put, the person who should be on Spidey's side. If Gwen is the good queen, Mary Jane is the bad one, I should say. Happy holidays to all. Thanks, Ange. He may as well have his own high top table, Edo Boznar says. Hey, great show. I have to say I've always liked Spectacular Spider-Man, or as I always call it, Peter Parker, to contrast with the main title, Amazing. I had a bit of an arc with reading it from sporadically picking up issues when the title was still in its teens to becoming a regular monthly reader during the Carrion saga, and then again during the more sporadic tempo after issue 60. All that to say, I have never had the particular issue you discussed here, but several of those surrounding it, especially any that featured Cloak and Dagger. However, I enjoyed the discussion nonetheless. Because I really like this era of the title, in fact, I'm being honest, back then I usually liked it better than Amazing, as I think both Mantlow and Stern, and then Mantlow again, were writing some really solid stories. Anyways, happy holidays to you and everyone else. Best wishes for the new year. Thank you, Edo. FW Godfather and host of Fade Out, Rob Kelly says, Amazing Spider-Man should have ended at 99, the hottest of all hot takes. You guys mentioning Spidey sense made me think, since I heard a reference to it on a different non-comics podcast the same day, is that power the most pop culturally known superpower? Sure, everyone knows Superman can fly, but that power isn't limited to him. But I feel like somehow, maybe the movies, that Spidey sense has escaped containment and it's its own kind of thing. You could drop it in the conversation virtually. Everyone would know what you meant. Interesting that sports talk got replaced by car talk this episode. Fantastic Four remains the manliest show on the network. Thank you, Rob. Andy is also a delight to listen to, no matter what the podcast. Agreed. Great way to wrap up the show's first year, though you kind of peaked last month. Yeah, so says you, Rob. Always ready with a question. Bucky749 says, Happy holidays. Here's my fantastic question. If you could have three members of the Spider-Verse in a lounge as guests, who would you choose? Well, I think I'd take that punk rock Spider-Man. He could play the lounge. I think I would take the Peter Parker who wears the robe and has the kid with him, because you know that way I can talk to another dad. And finally, Jessica Drew. It's got to be Jessica Drew. Yep, just a class to join up. Thanks, Bucky. FW All-Star and host of Cheers Cast, Ryan Daly says, this episode combined two of my favorite things, Andy Leyland and questions. Also, I also like Spider-Man and Dodge Chargers and Scotch and Brett. So, you know, fun show. I'm going to have that etched on a pillow. I also like Spider-Man and Dodge Chargers and Scotch and Brett. Yeah, that's going to be my new pillow. Thanks, Ryan. FW All-Star and host of DC Special Cast, Paul Kian says, great show. Love hearing Andy on any show. The Amazing Spider-Man ended at 99 conversation really was the highlight for me. Got me thinking. While I could have ended, I think the greater question would have been, what if Marvel/Stan/whoever let Peter continue to develop the next 100 issues as much as the first 100? We would have seen Peter and Gwen get married and Peter would get a full-time job. I like the idea of Peter working for Osborn and also have kids, married Aunt May dying of natural death, etc. It reminds me of the Spider-Man Mexican comics, which did not print the death of Gwen and continued on from there. I would love to see this reprint and translated someday, but I doubt it will. Interesting. I had no idea about that, Paul. That's really cool. And I love the question about the dad shows. Anything with Jim Rockford and Jamie Summers has me at the go. Thanks, Paul. A new patron in the lounge, Alan Boyce, says, here's my mashup team. Angus MacGyver from MacGyver. He's the Mr. Fix-It. Hallie Mad Murdock from the A-Team, Transportation. Colt Seavers, the Fall Guy from Muscle. Barney Collier, Mission Impossible for Electronics and Communication. Robin Masters from Magnum PI and Charles Talzin from Charlie's Angels. They're the Control and the Finance. Artemis Gordon, the Wild Wild West. Disguise and Infiltration, Spencer and Hawk. Spencer for Hire, Muscle and Guns. Nice. Vehicles, a GMC K2500, Chevy K10, three-fourths ton pickup truck, Ford Mustang, the Hughes 500D helicopter. Nice. And the Chevy 4 Ecoline conversion van. Very good. Wow, there's some sweet vehicles. Based on the Midwest, but could be anywhere in the U.S. So we're thinking like Detroit, Chicago, something like that. Yep, I get that. I love listening to the podcast as well as Andy's keep doing the good work. Thank you, Alan, and welcome. Fantasylon's regular Captain Entropy says that Andy Leyland, if he could just be a little more knowledgeable and excited about his material, he'd be a great podcaster. Note, for those who can't distinguish sarcasm in writing, this is what it looks like. And he can't possibly be more knowledgeable and excited about Spider-Man. So he is a great podcaster. Note to self, get more Andy Leyland podcasts in your life. I agree. Terrific episode as usual, gents. I love this era of Peter Parker too. And Boomerang is always entertaining. Check out the Ohotmu or Not discussion of him for some grade A comedy. I'll have to do that. Over at the Long Box Crusade, Amazing Spider-Man Chronicles has covered some of Peter's mistreatment of Deb Whitman. They're hilarious, so they make it entertaining as one can when Peter's being such a jerk. I wasn't aware that Deb Whitman had gotten any justice, but I'm glad to hear she did. Regarding the muscle car rental, I know exactly what you mean. I once had to go from northern Florida to South Carolina for work and realized it would be cheaper for the government if I just rented a car. Normally, I'd have to get the compact, but the killer salesman at the counter pointed out that if I kicked in $98 of my own money, I could have a Mustang convertible for the week. We concluded a day or two back in Florida where we drove it to a concert. It was a good decision. That is a good decision, Cap. Brett, you're a great host and bartender as always, but the fantastic questions were exceptionally good this time. I vote for Andrew as the next Spider-Man writer at Marvel. His pitch sounds, well, amazing, maybe spectacular. I feel for Peter on the whole working for your greatest enemy thing, but there's always a hope you can prevent it or at least mitigate disaster. But hey, like you said about the thugs, he knew what he was getting into when he took the money. I'm also calling your specific recipe Glen Morangi Whiskey Rocks, etc. Spider Scotch. I received a bottle of single malt for Christmas from a friend at work. It isn't Glen Morangi, but I will be using it one of the giant balls of ice because I'm just not as manly as the Fantastic Four. So it won't be exactly Spider Scotch when I drink it. More of a close knockoff like Scarlet Spider Scotch. Still good. There's nothing wrong with a big cube, Kevin. See you next time in the Fantastic Lounge. Thanks, Kevin. Another new patron of the Fantastilines, Liz Ann Oswald, says, Happy New Year. Thanks, Liz. Always classing up the joint, Martin Gray says, Great show. Apologies for taking a bit to get to it. I was away playing various sports, but now I'm back courtesy of my new muscle car. Actually, I had to look up that phrase. First off, is whiskey with no added ingredients really a cocktail? I think not, which means if I ever get on the show, I'm having a cup of tea straight. Martin, you will be on the show and we're not having tea. It's always such a treat to hear Andrew Guest. And here he's introduced me to the phrase crimbo limbo. It is rather perfect. I was back at work on the 29th of December being in the emergency service of newspapers, but I don't mind. I hate New Year's. Of course, some of us got the Hannibal Hayes reference, Andrew. We're too old. 10 past 8, BBC Two Mondays. That was indeed a great period for the Peter Parker book. Heck, those covers were so good that they were worth the price of admission. But story and art were great, too. I recently learned that Marcy Kane turned out to be a space alien connected to Jack of Hearts. Can't Marvel just let civilians be civilians? I totally agree, Martin. And yeah, Peter was a total git to Deb Whitman. I've not kept up with Peter. Did Peter know Boomerang was a murderer when he let him be his roommate? I don't know. That's a good question. Martin follows up with, P.S. regarding your comments on my comments and the feedback, UK Yoo-hoo glue is pronounced exactly the same as U.S. Yoo-hoo. That's the point. Okay, I get it. How could you forget Linus's teacher, the trombone voice, Miss Othmar? I know. I totally missed that, Martin. My fault. FW All-Star and host of Peacebound and Down, the Wonder Woman podcast, Sean Ross says, Great episode, guys. I was listening in my car when Andy said Ditko swipes, meaning art, but I heard it as Ditko wipes, and now I'm obsessed with what their slogan would be. When your butt needs to be objectively clean, or you never question if you're clean again, when is A not A? It's a Ditko wipe. Or yeah, maybe out of Ditko wipes, use a fountain head instead. That was mine. I agree with Andy that Peter was horrible to Deb. So many friends and love interests of superheroes have questioned their judgment and sanity for so many years. My favorite love interests for Peter are the ones who know from the start that they will never work. Sean loves the doomed romances. A few years ago, Dan Slott had Peter lose everything. And his teammate from the New Avengers, Mockingbird, takes him in. She clearly has a thing trying to rescue good men who are messy. See Kazar and Hawkeye, but even she can't handle that mess. Thanks for a great show. Thanks, Sean. The greatest Nate, I know, Nate the Great, says, I'm not in favor of ending Amazing Spider-Man with 100, mostly because I like MJ and the Black Cat better than Gwen. Never thought much of Deb Whitman, but now I realize she looks kind of like the Arrow show's Felicity Smoke. Yes, she does. This episode does make me wish Frank Miller drew more Spidey comics in the old days. Dad Show team, switch Jamie Summers out for Linda Carter, Wonder Woman. But the idea of Bruce Campbell meeting the A-team is awesome. Thanks, Nate. Fantastic Lounge regular Warhill Terry says, when Brett announced the feature spirit for this episode, my immediate reaction was, Andrew will be grossly insulted if Brett adds anything to it. Of course, Brett knows better than to mess up a one-ingredient cocktail. Actually, I didn't, Andrew. I did give, or Terry, I did give him a couple examples because I wasn't sure he wanted to make some kind of actual cocktail. And Andrew set me straight right away that he was like, no, we're drinking this neat. Maybe someday I'll treat myself, but for now, whenever I save up enough to indulge in good scotch, I choose Black Grouse. It's a blend, but I'm quite fond of the smoky, peaty taste. Speaking of peaty taste, Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man was a book I collected from issue one. By the time this one came out, I was nearly finished with it. Hannigan's work, especially on the covers, was keeping my interest, but the supporting cast irritated me to no end. I also remember being annoyed at the conflicting romantic interests across the three Spider-Man books, Mary Jane and Amazing, Marcy Kane, and Deb Whitman in Spectacular, and Sissy Whoever in Team Up. It really felt like different Peters in each book. Eagerly awaiting the next episode. Thanks, Terry. And making it for last call, John Stibe says, another fun episode of Fantastic Four that I listened to over the holidays while snow blowing my driveway multiple times. And that's what I get for living in Wisconsin, I guess. I wanted to wish everyone Happy New Year as well. And now it seems kind of late. That's all right. You can still wish us Happy New Year, John. Thank you. Really appreciate Andy Leyland and all the Spider-Man talk. Bonus, fantastic points for name-checking Rocket Racer and Big Wheel. Deep, but very fun cuts. Cheers, everyone. Thanks, John. And thank you all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to the Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And of course, please leave a 5-star review. Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of the Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show. I will read all feedback at the end of every episode. Follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcast. Use our hashtag online, hashtag FW Podcast. I can be found on Instagram, Blue Sky, and Imaginate Design. Thanks again to Shotgun for hanging out at the Fantastic Lounge. Until next time, the bar is open.